Welcome to another brand new episode of Take a Shelfie, the podcast about bottle shops and the pints and people you find therein. I'm Jeff Martin, and with me as always is a man who thought that showing up at 9:45 for a 10 o'clock opening of an anniversary party of our favorite bottle shop was going to be a good idea, Matt Prince. Hi, Matt.
Yeah, how are you? Yeah. I'm great, and luckily you got there at 9, and there were already people in line, so you told me to get over there as quickly as possible. Lucky for me, I was right around the corner, so I literally was there 3 minutes later.
Yeah, it was good that you hightailed it, because by 9:45, the line had extended to a point that I'm not certain that you would have gotten the release that was happening yesterday.
Right, and as we came to find out, it was a release not to be missed.
Yeah, so for the listeners, our favorite bottle shop, Pinocchio's, in Media, Pennsylvania, was celebrating their 11th anniversary. What they normally do is they have a little party in the bottle shop, of course, this being gestures broadly, that couldn't happen. So what they did was they decided to put together special packs of beer plus a glass plus a shirt. And, you know, you lined up and you could get it and you could go on your merry way. And it was a pretty special day. We don't need to go through the entire list, but it was certainly worth going. And so happy birthday, happy anniversary to Pinocchio's.
Yes, happy anniversary. Without you guys, we probably would not have this podcast. So
exactly. Matt, are you drinking any of the special beers that you got yesterday?
You know, I'm not, Jeff, and it's because of our episode today. You came to me with this great idea, and I really love it and had never really thought about this. You know, we're lucky we can drink beer. But, you know, we can walk into a bottle shop and every beer is for us. No matter what's on the shelf, we can enjoy it. That's not the case for everyone. As we know with one of our prior guests, Chris Horn, you know, Chris had an allergy that kept him from drinking beer specifically. Until a few years ago when he could start drinking beer. So he went all through college, no beer. All through his early 20s, no beer. He's not the only one, you know, and I started thinking about those people that can't enjoy. And we actually have friends who are gluten free and they have a gluten allergy. And there is a small, albeit, you know, it is small, but a niche of gluten free craft beer. So I'm enjoying one that you gave me called Semicolon from Conshohocken Brewing.
Yeah, so Semicolon is a gluten, I don't know if it's gluten-free or gluten-reduced, but it's a non-gluten beer, and also it is a cause beer. It's for suicide prevention. So that was a double, you know, sort of a double reason to enjoy it. Are you enjoying the beer, Matt? I had it a couple weeks ago.
You know, I am. It's delicious. It's really good. And I've told you in private conversations that, like, I don't always go for a beer from Conshohocken, not because I don't like their beer, but because I've had most of them. They stick to like a pretty like firm schedule of beers. So I've had a lot, but I never had this one. And I really like it. It's a nice, light, crisp pale ale. It's not fancy, but I think if you're someone who's has a gluten allergy, this tastes like any other, you know, nicely made pale ale. I mean, I could be drinking this. I could be drinking Yard's Philly Pale Ale. It to me runs in that same category. Very good.
We are far from experts in the gluten-free beer category, but we do have an expert in the gluten-free beer category here today. So let's just welcome her on the show. Bridget Thompson, welcome to Take a Shelfie.
Hi. Thank you so much for asking me to do this.
Oh, it was our pleasure.
We're glad to have you because you are far more educated in the gluten-free beer category than we are, for good reason. You have a gluten intolerance. Is that correct?
I have celiac disease. So celiac disease behaves like an allergy, but it's actually an autoimmune disorder that's triggered by ingesting gluten. So kind of presents the same way, but it's not technically an allergy. It has like similar symptoms, but kind of worse long-term effects if it's not strictly observed. So
when were you made aware of your celiacs?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with celiac when I was 32. So I had been enjoying beer for quite some time, and bagels and pasta and bread and all of those other things. And then I was diagnosed and had to relearn how to eat and how to drink and read labels and yeah.
How did you get into beer, and what were you enjoying before you found out that you had celiacs?
Yeah, so I didn't like beer for a long time. In college, I would drink beer if it was the only thing available, but it was not my choice. And then after grad school, I went out, like I was waiting tables, and I went out to the bar after a shift with a friend, and she ordered a craft beer, and I ordered wine, and she took a sip of her beer, and she was like, oh, this is not for me. I'm not going to drink this. And she kind of pushed it aside and was going to order another one and just leave it. And I was a broke server at the time. So I was like, that's no, you're not just going to leave that there. I'll drink it. And I had absolutely no like craft beer experience. It was the Yards Brawler, which is like not a gateway beer. Now I can say that on the other side. And I took a sip of it and I was like, oh, I don't hate this. This is kind of good. And so I drank Brawlers that night, and just kind of started sampling different brews and different, breweries after that. And I asked Jeff if he was going to make fun of me for being a basic IPA lover, but I really, really am. And I eventually found my way to, go up to a bar and say, like, what's the hoppiest thing you have on tap? That's what I drink. So I often say, like, if I was gonna die before the symptoms hit me, if I was having my last meal, I would just drink a case of Bell's Two Hearted to my head, and I would be a happy lady.
Well, that's a fantastic beer to die to. So, I mean, I think that's one of the greatest beers out there. We've talked about Bell's Two Hearted on this podcast. It's fantastic beer. So, you get diagnosed, you're 32, you're a huge IPA fan, and then you have to completely, redo your whole game plan when it comes to alcohol consumption, beer. What was that like to have to, kind of reteach yourself in terms of alcohol? Of course, not in the grand scheme of things, not the most important thing in life, but you like beer, so I can imagine that.
It totally sucked. It sucked. It was a big adjustment. I got diagnosed, and they were like, you should go see a nutritionist who specializes in gluten-free and like learn all this stuff, right? So there was like a month of time after diagnosis while I was waiting for this appointment. And so I started trying gluten-free beers, and the best ones I found, well, the best one I found that was like regularly available was Omission. So I was like, oh my gosh, okay, here's a beer that I don't hate. Like I can live with this, right? And I went to this nutritionist appointment, and they said, like, bring your husband with you, like bring someone else. It's a lot to take in. It was a 2-hour appointment. And we talked about all these different things. We talked about, like the cereal that I like that I couldn't eat anymore, and like how to read labels and like what you can substitute and what you can't. And I was fine. I was like holding it together. I was taking notes. I was being very like, studious, like learn. I was committed to learning how to do this. And then we get to beer, and I was like, oh, I found a beer that I like. Like I was a big craft beer lover, and like I've been drinking this Omission the last week. I think it's good. And she was like, oh, you can't drink that. And I just lost it, like started bawling. And then I was like, you're gonna think I'm crazy because the beer is what's making me cry. Like, but that was the hardest thing. Like, there wasn't a great substitute. So Omission is gluten removed. So it's brewed with gluten-containing ingredients, and then they use some kind of process to remove the gluten. And it's not considered safe for celiacs because you can have like an internal reaction without external symptoms that can do damage to your body. And unless you're having regular scopes after you drink this gluten-removed beer to see if that's happening, there's really no way to know. So the advice is to kind of avoid things that are gluten removed. So I tend to avoid that.
So just to catch listeners up, there are two ways basically to produce a quote unquote non-gluten beer. The first is to brew a beer as you would with gluten-containing ingredients, and then use a product called Brewer's Clarex, and that denatures the proteins and removes the gluten from it. And the other way is to brew beer with non-gluten containing ingredients. You know, your sorghum, rice, quinoa, maize, and you are not allowed to call a beer gluten-free unless it has less than 20 parts per million gluten. But Bridget, what you're saying is that for a lot of people with not just a gluten intolerance, but full-on celiac disease, these gluten-reduced beers aren't going to be helpful for you. You need to go for a beer that is made from the beginning to be gluten-free.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure there are celiacs that drink gluten-removed beers with no ill effects. The beers are, like, spot-tested for the gluten. But if they're made with gluten-containing ingredients, like, there's just no way to know if the beer that you crack open at home is going to make you sick or not. That said, I have been to, you know, I've been out where there's been like a gluten removed beer on tap, and I drink that because I'm like, oh my God, like something on tap I can drink, you know, that's exciting. But it's not something I do regularly. It's not super advised for celiacs just because there's an unknown and it's new, right? Like it's a new, relatively new technology. So we don't really know, you know, it'll get better. I like to imagine that sometime in my lifetime, it's going to be perfected to the point where lots of beers are at my disposal. But yeah, so I tend to lean towards beers that are brewed with non-gluten containing grains. So the beer that I tend to drink on the regular is millet, sorghum, corn. And so that's why they have kind of this different flavor profile, because you don't have the barley and the wheat, which have that, you know, beer flavor we're used to.
Now, Bridget, what are you drinking right now? Because I have a feeling that the beer you're talking about is the beer that's sitting in front of you. So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking the Glutenberg IPA. So this is millet, buckwheat, and corn. Actually, I'm not drinking it yet. But...
There it is.
There we go. Cheers. No, it's good. I mean, for our listeners, I think that when, you know, even when we go into Pinocchio's, there is like a section that is a, you know, that has Glutenberg and like there the other like beers like Omission. And then if you really know what you're talking about, you look on the shelf. Like I went in there yesterday and I remembered that there that Stone makes a gluten reduced beer, a gluten removed beer. So what you were saying you shouldn't drink typically, and that's Unholy right here. And that's Delicious IPA. And I remember the first time I had it, I didn't know it was gluten reduced. So I had it and I was like, this is really good. And then I heard it was gluten reduced and I was like, oh, hey, like cool for my gluten-free friends. But then learning more, you know, just from my quick Google search and from talking to you now, Bridget, it's not really for everyone who is gluten-free. I guess if you have a gluten allergy, maybe it's more for you and not necessarily celiacs. But it's a shame because it's a shame that we haven't made more moves in that direction, getting more gluten-free beers, seeing more breweries, you know, just make one that someone who's gluten-free can drink when they're in. I think that would be something that would attract a whole new crowd. I feel like some of these big or these trendier craft breweries have the knowledge. So
sure. The more breweries try to make good gluten-free beers, the better they get across the board, the more people are going to be willing to drink them who don't need to drink gluten-free beer. Like, isn't that the goal, right? Like, make it so good that people are like, oh, I like the flavor of that. Because there's something about this gluten-free label that turns people off, right? Because they expect it to taste different. They expect it to be, you know, not as good or an imitation of something. And, you know, that's what a big conversation I had the other night about this is like, one, I tasted a bunch. I went to Pinocchio's the other day and I was like, I'm going to buy all like one of all the gluten-free beers that they have. And I'm going to taste test them. And I made a spreadsheet and I ranked them because I am a Ravenclaw and that is what we do. So, but I had some of the, they had a couple Glutenbergs, which I had had before, but we did a blind tasting. So I like numbered the glasses and it was fun. I'm a nerd. But one of the problems was, is like, one of the beers I really, really liked, I was like, it's good, but it doesn't taste like what it's supposed to be, right? So like, why are we making it and saying like, oh, this is a gluten-free, like, Belgian? Why can't it just be something else? Like, it doesn't have to be like in the style of wit beer. Like, it can just be its own thing and taste good. But if you put in somebody's mind that it's supposed to be XYZ and then it tastes different, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I actually wanted to get into that a little bit because, Bridget, when you poured that Glutenberg, I was really impressed, and you're sipping it again, and there's impressive head retention on that. And the thing I'll say about having tried Semicolon is there's not really good head retention on that beer. And the reason, and here's, you know, homebrewer drink, everybody, homebrewer nonsense, is that proteins are really important to head retention, and gluten is a protein. And so I think if you're not making the gluten-free beer, and some scientist is going to destroy me after this episode airs, if you're not being careful when you make the gluten-free beer, you're going to lose a lot of the proteins that are important for the body, important for head retention, and so on. But that beer, through a Zoom screen, it looks like it has the characteristics of a regular beer. And I think that when you said that we shouldn't be trying to make gluten-free, like, wit beer, you hit that on the head, because a wit beer it's wheat. It's intentionally a very wheat-heavy, gluten-full, glutinous beer. So why are we even trying to make... Why are we even trying to make it? It's like the old vegetarian thing, right? Like, everyone wanted to make a veggie burger, like, you know, to try to trick people into eating vegetables. You know, Morningstar made all the veggie things in patties, but why not just make delicious vegetable forward food?
Mm-hmm. Yes, like vegan sausage. Why?
Yeah.
Not going to taste like that thing, you know? So just eat something that is delicious vegan in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also impressed by your beer, and that when I saw you drinking it, like, there is a stigma. Like, if someone offered me like a gluten-free beer, I'd be like, nah. Like, I might have the inclination to turn them down. Like, Jeff, you gave me this can of Semicolon, and I was like, all right, if we end up doing this episode, I'll drink it. But if not, I'll probably sit in my fridge. Like, it'll probably be in the back of my fridge. And you know what? Now that I'm drinking it, I wish I had more. Like, it's very good. And yeah, I really like it. It's like a nice crushable pale ale. And I don't notice any different. The only thing that's different is it's really thin and had no head. But it's normally when I see a beer with no head, I think it's going to be flat. It's not flat. This tastes fantastic. Like, I would drink the, if I was at the brewery right now and they had Semicolon on tap, I would order it, because it's one of my favorite Conshohocken beers that I've had. So I really enjoy it. Now, Bridget, you said you went to Pinocchio's and you got every gluten-free beer they had. How many did they have?
So I only bought the gluten-free. I didn't buy any of the gluten removed. They did have a selection of gluten removed, and they also had a huge section of ciders, and they also had like hard kombucha, which I have no desire to drink. Which is but naturally gluten-free, right? Okay, so I only bought the strictly gluten-free beers, and there were six.
Okay, so were you pleasantly surprised by the amount of gluten-free, or were you disappointed by the lack of? Because I can't contextualize it.
I was totally blown away by how many options there were. And the guy working in there was just delightful. So I walked in and I said, I'm looking, you know, for gluten-free. Are they all together? And he was like, oh, yeah. And he walked me over to the section of the fridge and he was like, this is gluten removed. This is XYZ. Like, down here is all the real gluten-free that's like brewed with millet and buckwheat and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yes. Yes, beer man.
Was this guy, was he tall?
Yeah.
Was he thin?
Yeah, he told me his sister has celiac. So like, I appreciate that he has like a personal reason to know this stuff. But it was like, oh my God, it felt like just so normalized, which is like a silly thing for me to feel like, I don't know, it was cool.
This sounds like our season one guest, Alex Morris. He is the manager over there at the Beer Garden, and he is one of the most knowledgeable beer guys I know, and also Mr. Customer Service. He's great. Yeah, so shout out to Alex for helping Bridget out with the gluten-free beers. Little did he know this was research for an episode of the podcast he had already been on, but which is fantastic. So you like this Glutenberg IPA, which is great. And so what other styles did they have within the six beers?
That's interesting. So there were six beers, four of them were IPAs. There was a Goes, and there was the Glutenberg Blanche, which is their like Belgian style. So I wanted to do this blind tasting and rank them, but I purposefully only did the four IPAs because it was going to be so obvious what the other two were. And then I tasted them. And I will say that I am not a fan of a Goes, but I think people who like them in general would like this one. It's not my flavor of beer.
Nor mine.
Yeah. So that was like the Ghost Fish. It was very, like puckery. Not my thing.
Yeah. So the variety of styles is not dissimilar from what you would find in the normal beers. Like in the normal beers, Matt, we had this conversation last week. You're just going to get mostly IPAs and there's a couple other styles. So, I mean, at least gluten-free beer is following the trend of what's available. Like it's, if you're into beer and you need to have gluten reduced beer, at least you're able to drink what is popular, I guess.
I also wonder, I'm 100% speculating because I hadn't thought of this before, but I wonder if there's something about the potency of the flavor of hops that makes it really easy to like mask the other grains that have this like unfamiliar flavor. And so it like lends itself to making an IPA because they can kind of layer on that hops flavor.
That's actually a great point. And probably because I mean, we've said about IPAs in the past and, throwing a ton of hops into it covers a lot of sins. So you've tasted these and you've tasted a lot of gluten-free beers in your time, not just this weekend. So what are some standouts? You've got Ghost Fish, which makes the Goza that you weren't a fan of. You've got the Glutenberg, which makes a really good one. Who else is in the game and doing it well?
Yeah, I really liked, there was a Departed Souls called Good by PA. And that was my second ranked in the blind taste test. I actually ranked the Glutenberg first, which I was glad to do because I drink it all the time. And that made me like validated my love for it a little bit. But that I would 100% buy that Departed Souls again. That was really excellent. They also had a tangerine IPA from Departed Souls called Brute Tang Can. That was third on my ranking of four. It had that it tasted good. It tasted more like a cider. I don't know if you've ever had the Cider Boys Grand Mimosa, but it tasted like a little bit like that. Not as good, I thought. Like, if it's fruity, I'd rather have a cider. I don't know.
Yeah, brewed IPAs tend to be very dry, and I've found them to be very carbonated, in a way like champagne. That doesn't surprise me to hear that about it.
Yeah, and it has that tangerine in it, so it kind of just, that's what I thought of the whole time I was drinking it. But yeah, those are my favorites.
Departed Souls, by the way, out of Jersey City, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Not far away from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice work by them.
In the context of, the country.
The world.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Still up by New York City.
Probably like 2 hours from here.
Yeah. I've driven further to get to a brewery.
So I think we can, it's great that there were more options than you had maybe anticipated. I wonder if more brewers knew how many people were out there. I mean, I wonder if they know, like, I'm sitting here thinking there should be more than six, and there should be more breweries who are, big time breweries taking an taking a whack at one of these beers. I wonder if it's because they would have to do so much cleaning and so much separating of their work to make sure that there was no no gluten getting into the beers, and maybe the cleaning and the cost of that might be greater than what they'd get brewing these beers. I wonder if there's something to be said with that. Like, I know a lot of places don't do vegetarian food because they don't want to worry about cleaning everything that, you know.
Yeah, you would need, like, to make something truly gluten-free and not the gluten removed, like, they would need a whole dedicated line, like a dedicated brewing system and, like, bottling line and everything.
Right. So I guess gluten-free breweries are really the way to go. Well, maybe, you know, somebody will listen to this who's gluten-free and is a home brewer, and maybe they think, this is my chance. There is a calling for this. We need more gluten-free breweries, and it's time. Because, I mean, drinking a gluten-free beer, and, you know, now I do want to go and stop in Pinocchio's and make that six-pack of the gluten-free beers. I want to try them. I'm more interested now because...
It's much more expensive, though, Matt.
Oh, really? So how? If you don't mind me asking, how much was your six-pack?
$23.
You know, that's not bad. That's like when you make, I mean, making, as we've said, we've talked a little bit about price points of beer. When you build your own six packs now, it's a more expensive process than buying a four pack somewhere or a six pack somewhere. Maybe if bottle shops knew that they had a good six pack, maybe they could pre-make them and sell them as a six pack price. Maybe that would help out some of our gluten-free beer. Yeah.
Like the Glutenberg comes, well, I've only ever seen it in pounders. So, like, I don't think they can it smaller. And four packs of pounders tend to be either $13 or $14. So, like, that's pretty standard for the beer that I'm buying on the regular. But it's just more expensive. I mean, but it's good. Like, it's not, like, there's, what's that beer I hate? Redbridge. Have you tried this? Redbridge?
No.
It's like Anheuser-Busch gluten-free beer, and it's an abomination. Like, it's terrible.
No surprise.
I don't know off the top of my head, like, how much that costs versus like a six pack of comparable beer from like another big, like, I never buy that kind of beer anymore. So I don't know, but I think it's also like geographical, because last year I went to a wedding in San Diego. And there was gluten-free beer on every single menu, every single place I went.
Wow. So, San Diego definitely, I mean, they have one of the original great beer scenes. San Diego is like one of the original kings of beer. I mean, in terms of breweries like Stone. And I know that Ballast Point started out in San Diego, and Alpine Brewing started out in San Diego. There's that. That's like one of the great original West Coast beer scenes. So I'm not surprised. And I feel like that's like gluten free might be even more of like a lifestyle out in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So there's more of like a calling for it that, you know, I don't think like there are more people who do gluten free by choice on the West Coast. So there is definitely more people who are clamoring for that kind of beer to fit their lifestyle rather than, you know, there's just a lot of people with celiacs out there, you know? So sure.
I mean, there's also every single menu has vegan option. Every single menu has a vegetarian option. Every menu had the gluten-free option. So like, yes, it's totally like a cultural thing. It was awesome. Yeah. I'm here for that cultural thing. I wish Delco had that cultural thing.
I don't think Delco's going that way. I think Delco still has a lot of people who, even for people who are celiacs, they get eye rolled because they want to get gluten free stuff. They, you know, someone thinks you're on some kind of trend, and it's for your health. Like, it's not for your health. It's for your survival, honestly. And it needs to be taken more seriously. And, you know, if this is part one, Matt, in a series of gluten free episodes, I think we should get these folks from Departed Souls on the show, because I'm looking at their website and they have got a ton of styles. They've got a flagship West Coast IPA. That's the Goodbye PA, They made a gluten-free altogether, the restaurant cool. support beer for coronavirus. They've got another New England that they really like. There's a blonde ale. There's a raspberry pie inspired ale, which I guess that's a pastry stout ish something. Oh, it's a winter ale. They have a coffee stout. They have a pumpkin ale. These guys are just making every style of beer in gluten-free. So I think we should try to get them on. This has been very, very educational, Bridget. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, because, you know, it's easy just to walk past these beers in the window, in the case, and say, that's not for me. But, while it's made in a way that benefits people with celiacs, it is for everybody, and you can enjoy it. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
I'm so glad that anybody cares to hear about it. Like, honestly, yeah. It's the best thing I can experience is when people just ask about it, because, like, obviously it has a great effect on the beer I can drink, but it has an effect on many parts of my life. And like you said earlier, Jeff, like, some people just assume it's like a fad. So anytime someone genuinely asks me a question about it, I'm just delighted. So the fact that you guys are invested in hearing about it and learning about it and drinking the beer for yourself and, like, accepting that it's not some weird, like, Frankenstein beer, it's just different.
Yeah, so listeners, pipe in with what your favorite gluten-free beer is. That might give us an avenue to chase down to get some more gluten-free beers that we can enjoy. You can do that on our social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram at ShelfiePod, and we're at facebook.com/ShelfiePod. You can also do it at our website, ShelfiePod.com. You can subscribe to Take a Shelfie wherever you get your fine podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a nice review. It really helps with the promotion of the show. We will be back with some episodes about more glutinous beer, and we will revisit this subject, I'm sure, at another time. Until then, I'm Jeff Martin.
And I'm Matt Prince.
Cheers.